Big day today for Theresa May as she sits down with her cabinet ministers to start plotting her course around Brexit. Dealing with the fallout, of course, from the EU referendum will be one of the biggest challenges facing politicians for years. What are the top priorities, the biggest challenges, and indeed the policy areas? An Ulster Unionist Party delegation is this week on a fact-finding mission in Brussels. What is it hoping to achieve? Well, just a short time ago, I spoke to the party leader, Mike Nesbitt, and asked him what was the purpose of this trip.
We're in Brussels on a fact-finding mission. I think I recall on the 24th of June saying that we had entered an era of uncertainty that could last up to 10 years. And having spent a couple of days in Brussels, I would revise that and say it's an era of uncertainty that could last 10 years or more, because as MEPs come back from their summer break, the most common phrase is, I don't know the answer to that. So what we're trying to do is get some clarity about the way forward, because we don't know who's negotiating on behalf of the UK government. And, you know, the Prime Minister has the cabinet at Chequers today, and there's this turf war between Boris Johnson and Liam Fox and David Davies. We don't know who the Europeans are going to send into bat with these negotiations. I think the Prime Minister wants to negotiate with the Council of Europe, but the Commission will clearly not sit idly by. Mm-hmm. And the European Parliament will have to have its place. We don't know when the negotiations will start, and we don't even know when they'll finish, because even after you trigger Article 50, although the clock runs for 2 years, it is possible to extend. So huge uncertainty, and within that we want a bit of clarity. And we also want to know what the opportunities are for Northern Ireland.
Sounds as if, Mike, this was a bit of a pointless trip then, because you have lots of questions, but nobody's there to provide any answers.
Well, we are getting some clarity in terms of where the opportunities for Northern Ireland are. We've been talking to some very senior members of the European Parliament who run employment, who look after international trade, who look after social affairs. But we are getting a degree of clarity, and what we want to do is formulate a vision for Northern Ireland in the post-Brexit environment. Because if you think back to the letter that our two first ministers sent to Theresa May, all they identified was areas of concern, five areas of concern, which are legitimate, but they were there on the 23rd of June as much as they were on the 24th. What they haven't done is give the people of Northern Ireland a vision of how we could be better off after Brexit is completed. And we're working on that here. We also have a Brexit advisory panel back home made up of trade unions, business people, voluntary and community sector, universities, the people who depend on European support and funding. And they're helping us to devise a vision and also a list of the key asks, what the Northern Ireland Executive has to achieve, either through its own initiative or in conjunction with the UK government.
So you're saying the Executive doesn't have that vision yet. You don't have that vision yet either, do you? Because you're there as Leader of the Opposition. I'm sure you're facing questions too about what would you like to see happen because of Brexit. And do you have any answers? Are you able to say, well, this is my vision, this is the Ulster Unionist Party vision?
Yes, and we're very close to publishing that vision. It might be as early as next week that we will have a document which is our vision for Northern Ireland, and probably in and around 10 key asks that we believe are the key things that the Northern Ireland Executive has to achieve for the benefit of the people of Northern Ireland.
Give us a sense then of what's going to be in your vision.
Well, one of the key areas, Enda, is infrastructure. You know, you look at Pierre Trudeau, who's in China at the moment, and the big thing for the Canadians is infrastructure. The big thing for Northern Ireland is our lack of infrastructure. And that makes us less attractive to investors, particularly foreign direct investment. And we all know that while European money, or the thing, likes of the European Social Fund and Peace 4, may be secured until 2020, the big gap is going to be our infrastructure going forward. Why would Europe invest in roads or bridges in a country that is going to exit the European Union in the next small number of years? So what we are looking for is a guaranteed, ring-fenced, very significant pot of money over the next 10 years for major additional infrastructure works in Northern Ireland to make us more attractive to investors so that we can grow our private sector.
And where's that money coming from? Where's that money coming from, Mike? The money that you're looking to ring fence?
that money is going to come from the money that is not going to go to Brussels in the post-Brexit environment. It's not the $350 million that the Brexiteers promised us for the health service before the 24th of June, but there is a significant many billions per annum that will not be going to Brussels, and we want a cut of that, but we don't want to fritter away the way the executive tends to do. We want to say, let's invest it in a long-term future for our people.
And what about the big question about access to the single market, freedom of movement? Where does the Ulster Unionist Party stand on those issues, the big issues around Brexit?
Well, the big debate is, what sort of Brexit do we want? Because Theresa May came out with a very catchy, very simple phrase, Brexit means Brexit, but it has a fatal flaw, and it is that nobody knows what Brexit actually means. Now, you can have a very soft Brexit, which means that in maybe 5 years' time, you would hardly notice the difference between 5 years from now and the 1st of June on this year, or you can have a hard Brexit where we come out of everything. I think in terms of the importance of the trade with the 500 million people who make up the single market, that we want to get as close as possible to where we were. But that's a negotiation. You can look at what happened yesterday.
So does that mean you want to stay within the single market then? Is that what you're saying? Is that your message?
The single market is extremely important. Access to the single market is extremely important to Northern Ireland. But it's not just about that. And what about our universities? At the moment, they compete with the best in Europe, and that raises standards.
Yes, but in relation to the
Brexit era, they'll only be competing with the best in the United Kingdom.
I'll come to that in a second, Mike. But in relation to access to the single market, there may well be a price to pay in terms of open borders. Do you think that is a price worth paying? To get access to the single market?
That's the debate. You're trying to push me into giving you
yes, absolutely. Where do you stand on it?
I'm telling you, we're working on a vision, and we're working on our asks, and we may have those as early as next week.
But
just
because
the Rogan Show wants them today, that's neither here nor there.
That question has been around for a while, and if you're so close to publishing your vision for next week, surely you have addressed that issue, the single biggest issue for many, many people.
Yes, we have addressed that issue, and we continue to address that issue. And it's a fluid issue because yesterday we had the European authorities saying Apple owed the Irish government something like €13 billion. And the ridiculous situation where both parties, both Apple and the Irish government, say they want to appeal it. Now, there is a potential opportunity for the United Kingdom in a post-Brexit era if that ruling by the European authorities stick. But if you're moving away, Mike, from that central question about
access to the single market, which is so important for people here. Do you think that having open borders is worth the price worth paying to have access to the single market?
Let me finish the thought, please. If you want to maximise the opportunity that arose because of that ruling yesterday, then you may well have to put in place regulations in the United Kingdom which would knock you out of access to the single market, because the 27 remaining members of the European Union are not going to give you unfettered access to that single market on more favourable terms than they are giving themselves. That is my point. I did not deviate from your question.
What is your preference? You've talked about the implications of what happened yesterday, but what is the Ulster Unionist Party's preference?
I've told you, we will be publishing preferences with a document perhaps as early as next week.
But you haven't told us what your preference is over the single market and access to it and what price you're
because
willing to pay.
We are working on that, and we will be publishing a document as early as next week, possibly.
You've just criticised the First and Deputy First Ministers for providing no clarity, for providing a bland statement about what their demands are going to be and what they would like to see happen. And yet and all, you can't put any flesh on your bones, so to speak.
I'm going to be doing that next week. Now, I'm about to chair a session with the UK permanent representatives and our MLA group.
Are you a United Party in Brussels today? I see Tom Elliott's with you. Did he vote to leave or remain?
Tom Elliott, as far as I know, voted to leave, as did Robin Swan, as did Harold McKee, but we're beyond that end. That was the 23rd of June. On the 24th of June, people woke up to hear that the people of the United Kingdom had voted to exit the European Union. That's what we have to get on with. We have to maximise the opportunities for the people of Northern Ireland, all the people of Northern Ireland, in the post-Brexit era.
You're going to be meeting people, of course, who will be pretty angry that people here voted to leave the EU, and they'll look at your party and say, well, here's a party leader who couldn't even bring his own party with him.
That's ridiculous. I think
how is that ridiculous?
Brussels, because the people in Brussels were very shocked on the 24th of June. They've gone off, they've had their summer break, and they've come back with a practical head on saying, let's maximise the opportunities.
There you have it. Mike Nesbitt in Brussels today with his party, 12 members indeed of his party there as part of this delegation on the five-day fact-finding mission. Financial journalist Paul Gosling and businessman Erwin Armstrong, who were on opposite sides of the referendum battle, are with us this morning. Paul, morning to you. Morning, Erwin. First of all, Paul, you heard Mike Nesbitt say there that he's over there looking for answers, and so far he says that people over there don't really know what's going on, don't even know when the negotiations are going to start and what kind of form they're going to take. It sounds as if this is pretty much all over the place.
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty around it, not least within the cabinet. There is no clear policy within the government, and that means that everyone else is unclear where they stand, including other politicians at Brussels. I think it's perfectly sensible for Mike Nesbitt to go to Brussels to learn what the mood is amongst Brussels politicians, both at the Commission and amongst MEPs and also with officials at the political parties, and also to influence, because the situation facing Northern Ireland is different from the rest of the UK. We have a border with the Irish Republic, with the rest of the European Union. We have particular concerns about cross-border business engagement, and our interests are different from the rest of the UK.
Mm-hmm. So it's good then to have somebody over there right now, I suppose, on this fact-finding mission, in your opinion, just to sound things out so that we know where we stand.
Absolutely. I think all the political parties in Northern Ireland should do the same. I think it's perfectly mm-hmm. sensible.
How worried do you think we should be, Erwin, in these parts around Brexit?
I said before the referendum, and I repeat it now, there are massive opportunities for us. I mean, only this morning I heard in the news about South Derry Coachworks or South Derry Trailers getting massive orders, and talking about orders all over the world. They were acquired by a Chinese company. This is true internationalism. And these are the opportunities that will present themselves to us. And I agree that there is uncertainty at the moment, but I don't think Northern Ireland parties traipsing around Europe, following in the footsteps as Nicola Sturgeon, is going to achieve any more than she did. She was basically said, nice to see you and goodbye. That's what will happen here.
Because it's a waste of time then, is it, do you think?
If people want to wander around Brussels talking to people and trying to make the opposition in the Stormont look important, fine. But we have to accept that the cabinet mm-hmm. And the government, when they come to take decisions, will pay lip service to what the regions want. The referendum asked a question, and the government said it would enact what the people said, and that's what they're doing.
The difficulty is, of course, a lot of promises were made to a lot of people who voted to leave the EU, and there is some concern out there that a lot of those promises will not be delivered on.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, and I've said it before, and in fact I've said it before in this programme, there were a lot of promises and statements made on both sides that were wrong, and I did not agree with them. I wasn't a member of any of the official campaigns. So, I mean, I see the opportunity is getting out, but people don't seem to understand that the euro will probably not be with us in a few years' time. You know, Germany cannot keep putting money in to keep it alive, because the only reason Germany's doing that is because it's depressing the value of the euro to have Greece and Italy and Spain involved. And if they weren't in the euro, their currency would probably, I don't know, 10, 15% higher, and that would have a massive impact on their exports. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason they're doing it now. The people in Germany certainly don't want it. Mm-hmm. They just see it as a massive pit where they pour money into. So I don't think the euro will be there. Take the euro out, and the glue that holds the common market or the EU together will be gone.
Is he right, Paul?
Quite possibly. I think there's a lot of what's said there that is true, which is that with the UK leaving the European Union, then the European Union's future is undermined. And there are serious structural problems about the euro. There's countries within the eurozone, particularly Greece and Italy and Portugal, that should never have joined. So I think there are structural problems, but those are not here as yet. I mean, certainly there are political tensions within the European Union, which have been exacerbated by Brexit. Mm-hmm. But we are are rather anticipating the decline and the death of the euro, and I think that's probably not helpful to predict that as yet. I mean, but the reality is, within Northern Ireland, we're faced with substantial difficulties because of Brexit. We don't know what's going to happen with the border. We don't know what's going to happen with the common travels area. We don't know what's going to happen with membership of the customs union. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of membership of the single market. So we've got levels of uncertainty that are really affecting businesses in Northern Ireland in ways that they don't affect that same level, the rest of the UK.
What's your sense, Paul, of how Theresa May might get around that problem about access to the single market and having open borders? Because that is one of the biggest dilemmas that she's going to face around that cabinet table today, whenever they start, I suppose, to travel down this path.
I think the likelihood is there will be different arrangements for Great Britain and Northern Ireland. I can't see an alternative to that. I think Northern Ireland needs to remain a member of the single market. Great Britain probably doesn't. And I think that basically people voted to leave the European Union in order to control migration. If you're going to control migration, it does mean that effectively you can't be a member of the single market. So I think probably that the government will accept the idea that they have to leave the single market in order to control migration, but those arrangements would not suit Northern Ireland. But I don't imagine that even Theresa May has got a clear idea about actually what's going to happen, because she's got three Brexit ministers, David Davis, Boris Johnson, and Liam Fox, who actually have got substantially different views about what should happen in terms of Brexit.
Erwin?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we keep talking about is the UK having access to the single market. What hasn't been mentioned is the EU needs access to the UK market, because we buy about 80 billion euros more in trade from them than they buy from us. So, you know, this is not a one-sided negotiation. It's very far from it. And I think we have to accept that, you know, remaining in the single market is not the same as having access to the single market. You know, for example, I would suggest that we have a simple system of bringing people into the UK. It might be as simple as, number one, do you speak English? Number two, do you have a job? Number three, do you have a clear record? Answer yes, yes, and yes, and you've got your visa. It could be that simple. And that will allay a lot of the fears of people about, you know, coming in and benefits and things. You then have a nice level playing field. And I would apply the same rules, by the way, to the rest of the world. So everybody, it doesn't matter which part of the world you come from, can do the same things. And if we can negotiate that into a access to the market, that's great. But on the other hand, I think we also have to take account, I don't believe Northern Ireland will have any different arrangements to the rest of the United Kingdom, other than maybe some checks at the ports or airports, which are already in place anyway for most people. And the third thing, which we cannot ignore any longer, I've been saying it for some time, is that Ireland may finish up leaving the EU.
Okay. Let me hear.
Sorry, I've just finished the point. Water charges have been imposed. Tax on apple has been imposed, and that would have a very serious effect on the investment in Southern Ireland. And, you know, and they're now having to start to pay about $400 billion a year back into the EU. I think the possibility of our exit is something that will now be considered, at least, in a way that it maybe wasn't 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay. 030-30-80-55-55. Stay with us, gentlemen, because there's lots of listeners keen to have their say as well, to voice their concerns on where we stand right now and all this uncertainty, of course, which is out there. I should point out that some listeners are also asking the questions about who has funded the Ulster Unionist Party trip to Brussels. I think there's 12 party members there for this fact-finding mission. We did ask the Ulster Unionist Party to give us an answer on that. We're still waiting for a response. I didn't get a chance to ask Mike about it because he was a busy man this morning and he had to rush on to another meeting. Kieran, you're up. Give us your thoughts. What do you think?
Good morning, Enda. I would like to ask Erwin Armstrong what's he doing on the programme. He said he's a businessman.
Yeah, we asked him on the programme.
Well, you asked him on, but I'm only asking him a question. If he, as a businessman, how many farmers voted to stay in Europe? And how many other businessmen voted to stay in? He's tried to be an ex-Tory candidate, wasn't he? And that's what the Tories do, you see. He's all following the Leave campaign. So what I would say to Erwin Armstrong, fair enough, you're getting your points across, but I don't think you're all right what you're saying.
Yeah, but I accept the question. And I know in North Antrim, and I can't speak for the rest of Northern Ireland, that the majority of farmers in North Antrim actually voted to leave the European Union. And having spoken to them since, they're still very happy they voted to leave the European Union because they think it will be a lot better for farming in the future. And there are many business people in Northern Ireland who did not come out publicly, but privately.
How do you know that?
Because I talk to them. I'm in lots of organisations.
A lot of people here as well.
Yeah, no,
here where I live.
No, no, I'm not saying everybody did it or everybody didn't do it, but I'm saying...
There's a lot of businessmen that didn't vote to leave. They voted to stay on.
No, I accept that, but there are a lot of...
Here you on blowing your trumpet.
Hold on, let Erwin respond first of all, Kieran.
I speak to business people all the time.
Well, so do I, by the way.
Some of them voted to remain and wanted to remain. Others voted to leave, and there, I think, probably were more voted to remain in Northern Ireland than voted to leave. But
do you not think of them that what we should hold a poll here?
No, I do not. We are part of the United Kingdom. The referendum I voted in said, should the United Kingdom leave the European Union? It didn't say, should Northern Ireland.
Ask me this question, then. What are we going to do about the border going across Donegal?
Yeah, I am quite happy there will be no...
Like the army will be back on again.
No chance, no chance.
How do you know that?
Right, I will give you an idea.
You had a crystal ball.
Hold on, Kieran, hold on. You're going to have to let Erwin answer your questions.
Let me look in my crystal ball if you really want to.
Yes.
Number one, you have got trade between the north and south of Ireland, and we're now in a digital age. So most trade going north and south operates with licensed hauliers. And if licensed hauliers register the number plates, you can see them going back and forwards, and you can do spot checks.
Who do you think you're talking to? I am a hauliger.
Well, then you know that that's the case.
Yes, what I'm trying to explain to you, I remember driving lorries and bringing lorries back, taking from Dupont down to Cork, to unlock factories. And whenever I had to come back, you had to sit 12 hours overnight to get the borders opened.
Yeah, but that's the... I didn't catch your name.
Kieran.
Kieran, the point I'm making to you is, if you register your lorries and they are number plate recognition at the border, it says, that's one of Kieran's lorries, we know him, he's okay, he can continue.
So is that the way it's going to work, do you reckon?
I am only saying I'm looking in my crystal ball.
Because you were saying there 4 years ago, 4 years' time, that Europe will not have the Euros.
Okay, Kieran, I'm going to let it go there for now because there's lots of people want to have their say on Brexit as well this morning because, of course, we do know that this big meeting today of Cabinet, Theresa May is going to have to set out her stall in front of her ministers. Peter, you're up next. What do you think? What do you think, first of all, the Ulster Unionist Party in Brussels today on a fact-finding mission?
Well, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. What I wanted to phone up about was commentators and politicians that come on and say we cannot have trade with Europe without the free movement of people. This is like... determining their negotiations before they enter into them. That's wrong. Canada's done a trade agreement and they don't accept free movement of people. So that's a nonsense. The border never will begin. There was free movement of people here from the 1920s. It was the troubles caused the borders here. It wasn't, and the troubles are now gone. So the border will not be, there will not be armed troops at any border. There will be continued free movement of people. And I think it's fair comment that Ireland, given that Britain's its biggest trading partner, may have to look at things again in a few years. But British politicians are sitting on their hands because they want to let this two-year Article 50 thing be triggered January, February, March next year. It's going to take 2 years. After 2 years, we're going to be in the election. And at that point, you've already had the boy that's going for the leadership of the Labour Party saying that he'd put it to the people at that point. So they're trying to rerun. They're trying to stifle democracy in the sense that people have voted to come out and they're saying, vote again, much like Ireland. Keep going until you get the vote that you want. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting on their hands. It's going to cripple the British economy because they cannot do trade agreements with Asia or Australia or Canada or anybody else while they're part of Europe. So it's going to come to a point where it's detrimental to the British economy not to get out of Europe because they're tied to Europe. They will not be able to do trade agreements with other continents and other countries and the rest of the world. So it's going to be dagger mantled of Britain.
So what are you saying? You think it's never going to happen? Hold on, Peter, just to explain that a little bit further. What are you saying exactly then? Are you saying that this is never going to happen? It's going to be kicked down the road so far that it's just going to fade?
Well, I think it's going to be kicked down the road until the election so they can have another crack at it. I mean, if you go into January and then the trigger Article 50, and that's probably the earliest stage they'll trigger Article 50. Now, when Article 50 is triggered, it's going to take a further 2 years after that. Then you're into the election. We've already had a man who's standing for the leadership of the Labour Party saying that he put it to the people. There's many people saying you cannot have the market, enter the market without free movement of people. When the Canada Trade Agreement hasn't already done just that. So I don't understand why people, they're still trying to scare people back into changing their mind in the vote. When the President hasn't already been set with trade agreements with Canada, that you can have access to the market without free movement of people.
Okay, let me let Paul respond to that. Paul Gosling.
Well, firstly, I don't think Owen Smith is going to win the leadership of the Labour Party, and I don't think that this is going to be determined by the next general election. I believe, to be honest, that Theresa May, although she supposedly supported the Remain campaign, is actually quite intent to leave the European Union. The difficulty is that the UK government doesn't have a clear policy, and that is why it's going to take some time. And also, of course, the European Commission and the other leaders of the European Union don't have a clear policy in terms of what the negotiations will achieve. So it creates an enormous amount of difficulty in terms of achieving those negotiations. I do think it will happen before the next general election, but I think it will be pushed quite a long way down the line. And in the meantime, yes, that will be damaging to the economy of the whole of the UK, including Northern Ireland, because of the level of uncertainty. In particular in Northern Ireland, it will deter people from investing. We've already had one major investment conference that's been deferred indefinitely because of this. And would you, if you had a large amount of money, put money into Northern Ireland when you don't actually know whether the UK and Northern Ireland is going to be part of the single market or not, and you don't know what the terms of trade will be in the future? I mean, it will deter investment.
Peter?
Well, I think people need certainty. I think the sitting on the hands that they're doing is creating the fear and creating business to hang on to their money and not invest. So if they went down the road, I mean, what would the situation be this week if they go back into Parliament and they turn around and say, listen, we're negotiating a trade agreement with China, it'll be done in 6 months. We're negotiating a trade agreement with Canada, with Australia, New Zealand, with all the rest of the world. And by the way, they will have access to the European market, simply because they buy more from Europe than they sell to Europe. It's in Europe's interest to have trade with Britain. 800,000 cars were bought from Germany last year into the British market. Britain buys 90 billion euros worth of produce more from Europe than it sells to Europe. You're selling the British negotiation position short by saying they can't have this, they can't have that, they're not going to have this. Europe needs to trade with Britain. It's common sense. They buy more from them than they sell to them. Can you imagine if politicians were in Germany now talking to the unions of the automobile industry in Germany saying, we want to keep this trade going? What would the situation be? You need to waken up. Another thing is, too, there's two parties and none of them took the position that the majority of people in Britain took in the biggest referendum in the history of the country. None of the parties that are electable, Labour or Thing, the Conservatives, took the position that the majority of people in the biggest referendum in the history of the country took. Now, what is wrong with democracy when nobody is taking the view of the majority of the people that are elected, that nobody, no party is taking the view that the majority of the people in the country have? There's something wrong. Both these major parties are heading down one lane. Jeremy Corbyn is a threat to that lane, and that's why he's being vilified in the media morning, noon and night.
Okay, Peter, thank you very much indeed for that. Lots of more people looking to have their say as well.